more brilliant ideas. And between you and me, that's saying something. You see, only one who wanted to find the stone, find it but not use it, would be able to get it. Otherwise, they'd just see themselves making gold or drinking elixir of life. My brain surprises even me sometimes. Now, enough questions. I suggest you make a start on these sweets. Ah, Bertie Botts' every flavour beans. I was unfortunate enough in my youth to come across a vomit-flavoured one, and since then I'm afraid I've rather lost my liking for them. But I think I'll be safe with a nice toffee, don't you? He smiled and popped the golden brown bean into his mouth. Then he choked and said, "Alas! Earwax!" Madame Pomfrey, the nurse, was a nice woman, but very strict. "Just 5 minutes," Harry pleaded. "Absolutely not." "You let Professor Dumbledore in?" "Well, of course, that was the headmaster. Quite different. You need rest." "I am resting, look, lying down and everything." "Oh, go on, Madame Pomfrey." "Oh, very well," she said, "but 5 minutes only." And she let Ron and Hermione in.
"Harry!"
Hermione looked ready to fling her arms around him again, but Harry was glad she held herself in, as his head was still very sore.
"Oh, Harry, we were sure you were going to... Dumbledore was so worried."
"The whole school's talking about it," said Ron. "What really happened?" It was one of those rare occasions when the true story is even more strange and exciting than the wild rumours. Harry told them everything. Quirrell, the mirror, the stone, and Voldemort. Ron and Hermione were a very good audience. They gasped in all the right places, and when Harry told them what was under Quirrell's turban, Hermione screamed out loud. "So the stone's gone," said Ron finally. "Flamel's just going to die?" "That's what I said. But Dumbledore thinks that..." "What was it? To the well-organized mind... death is but the next great adventure." "I always said he was off his rocker," said Ron, looking quite impressed at how crazy his hero was. "So, what happened to you two?" said Harry.
"Well, I got back all right," said Hermione. "I brought Ron round, that took a while, and we were dashing up to the Owlery to contact Dumbledore when we met him in the entrance hall. He already knew. He just said, 'Harry's gone after him, hasn't he?' and hurtled off to the third floor."
"Do you think he meant you to do it?" said Ron, "sending you your father's cloak and everything?"
"Well," Hermione exploded, "if he did, I mean to say, that's terrible. You could have been killed."
"No, it isn't," said Harry thoughtfully. "He's a funny man, Dumbledore. I think he sort of wanted to give me a chance. I think he knows more or less everything that goes on here, you know. I reckon he had a pretty good idea we were going to try, and instead of stopping us, he just taught us enough to help. I don't think it was an accident he let me find out how the mirror worked. It's almost like he thought I had the right to face Voldemort, if I could."
"Yeah, Dumbledore's off his rocker, all right," said Ron proudly. "Listen, you've got to be up for the end-of-year feast tomorrow. The points are all in and Slytherin won, of course. You missed that last Quidditch match. We were steamrolled by Ravenclaw without you. But the food'll be good." At that moment, Madame Pomfrey bustled over.
"You've had nearly 15 minutes. Now, out," she said firmly.
After a good night's sleep, Harry felt nearly back to normal. "I want to go to the feast," he told Madame Pomfrey as she straightened his many candy boxes.
"I can, can't I?"
"Professor Dumbledore says you are to be allowed to go," she said sniffly, as though in her opinion Professor Dumbledore didn't realize how risky feasts could be. "And you have another visitor."
"Oh, good," said Harry. "Who is it?"
Hagrid sidled through the door as he spoke. As usual, when he was indoors, Hagrid looked too big to be allowed. He sat down next to Harry, took one look at him, and burst into tears.
"It's all my ruddy fault," he sobbed, his face in his hands. "I told the evil Gitow to get past Fluffy. I told him it was the only thing he didn't know. And I told him you could have died, all for a dragon egg. I'll never drink again. I should be chucked out and made to live as a muggle."
"Hagrid," said Harry, shocked to see Hagrid shaking with grief and remorse, great tears leaking down into his beard. "Hagrid, he'd have found out somehow. This is Voldemort we're talking about. He'd have found out even if you hadn't told him."
"You could have died," sobbed Hagrid. "And don't say the name."
"Voldemort," Harry bellowed. And Hagrid was so shocked he stopped crying. "I've met him, and I'm calling him by his name. Please cheer up, Hagrid. We saved the stone. It's gone. He can't use it. Have a chocolate frog. I got loads." Hagrid wiped his nose on the back of his hand and said,
"That reminds me. I got your present."
"It's not a stoat sandwich, is it?" said Harry anxiously. And at last Hagrid gave a weak chuckle.
"Nah. Dumbledore gave me the day off yesterday to fix it. Course he should have sacked me instead. Anyway, got you this."
It seemed to be a handsome, leather-covered book. Harry opened it curiously. It was full of wizard photographs. Smiling and waving at him from every page were his mother and father.
"Sent owls off to all your parents' old school friends, asking for photos. Knew you didn't have any. Do you like it?"
Harry couldn't speak, but Hagrid understood. Harry made his way down to the end-of-year feast alone that night. He had been held up by Madame Pomfrey's fussing about, insisting on giving him one last check-up, so the great hall was already full. It was decked out in the Slytherin colours of green and silver, to celebrate Slytherin's winning the House Cup for the 7th year in a row. A huge banner showing the Slytherin serpent covered the wall behind the high table. When Harry walked in, there was a sudden hush, and then everybody started talking loudly at once. He slipped into a seat between Ron and Hermione at the Gryffindor table, and tried to ignore the fact that people were standing up to look at him. Fortunately, Dumbledore arrived moments later. The babble died away.
"Another year gone," Dumbledore said cheerfully, "and I must trouble you with an old man's wheezing waffle before we sink our teeth into our delicious feast. What a year it has been! Hopefully your heads are all a little fuller than they were. You have the whole summer ahead to get them nice and empty before next year starts. Now, as I understand it, the House Cup here needs awarding, and the points stand thus. In fourth place, Gryffindor with 312 points. In third, Hufflepuff with 352. Ravenclaw has 426, and Slytherin 472.
A storm of cheering and stamping broke out from the Slytherin table. Harry could see Draco Malfoy banging his goblet on the table. It was a sickening sight.
"Yes, yes, well done, Slytherin," said Dumbledore. "However, recent events must be taken into account."
The room went very still. The Slytherin's smiles faded a little.
"Ahem," said Dumbledore. "I have a few last-minute points to dish out. Let me see. Yes. First, to Mr. Ronald Weasley."
Ron went purple in the face. He looked like a radish with a bad sunburn.
"For the best-played game of chess Hogwarts has seen in many years, I award Gryffindor House 50 points.
Gryffindor cheers nearly raised the bewitched ceiling. The stars overhead seemed to quiver. Percy could be heard telling the other prefects, "My brother, you know, my youngest brother, got past McGonagall's giant chess set." At last there was silence again.
Second, to Miss Hermione Granger, for the use of cool logic in the face of fire, I award Gryffindor House 50 points.
Hermione buried her face in her arms. Harry strongly suspected she had burst into tears. Gryffindors up and down the table were beside themselves. They were 100 points up.
Third, to Mr. Harry Potter, said Dumbledore.
The room went deadly quiet.
For pure nerve and outstanding courage, I award Gryffindor House 60 points.
The din was deafening. Those who could add up while yelling themselves hoarse knew that Gryffindor now had 472 points, exactly the same as Slytherin. They had tied for the House Cup. If only Dumbledore had given Harry just one more point. Dumbledore raised his hand. The room gradually fell silent.
"There are all kinds of courage," said Dumbledore, smiling. "It takes a great deal of bravery to stand up to our enemies, but just as much to stand up to our friends. I therefore award 10 points to Mr. Neville Longbottom."
Someone standing outside the great hall might well have thought some sort of explosion had taken place. So loud was the noise that erupted from the Gryffindor table. Harry, Ron, and Hermione stood up to yell and cheer as Neville, white with shock, disappeared under a pile of people hugging him. He had never won so much as a point for Gryffindor before. Harry, still cheering, nudged Ron in the ribs and pointed at Malfoy, who couldn't have looked more stunned and horrified if he'd just had the body-bind curse put on him.
"Which means," Dumbledore called over the storm of applause, for even Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff were celebrating the downfall of Slytherin, "we need a little change of decoration!"
He clapped his hands. In an instant the green hangings became scarlet, and the silver became gold. The huge Slytherin serpent vanished, and a towering Gryffindor lion took its place. Snape was shaking Professor McGonagall's hand with a horrible, forced smile. He caught Harry's eye, and Harry knew at once that Snape's feelings toward him hadn't changed one jot. This didn't worry Harry. It seemed as though life would be back to normal next year, or as normal as it ever was at Hogwarts. It was the best evening of Harry's life, better than winning at Quidditch, or Christmas, or knocking out mountain trolls. He would never, ever forget tonight. Harry had almost forgotten that the exam results were still to come, but come they did. To their great surprise, both he and Ron passed with good marks. Hermione, of course, had the best grades of the first years. Even Neville scraped through, his good herbology mark making up for his abysmal potions one. They had hoped that Goyle, who was almost as stupid as he was mean, might be thrown out, but he had passed too. It was a shame, but as Ron said, you couldn't have everything in life. And suddenly their wardrobes were empty, their trunks were packed. Neville's toad was found lurking in a corner of the toilets. Notes were handed out to all students, warning them not to use magic over the holidays. "I always hope they'll forget to give us these," said Fred Weasley sadly. Hagrid was there to take them down to the fleet of boats that sailed across the lake. They were boarding the Hogwarts Express, talking and laughing as the countryside became greener and tidier, eating Bertie Bott's every flavour beans as they sped past Muggle towns, pulling off their wizard robes and putting on jackets and coats, pulling into platform 9 3/4 at King's Cross Station. It took quite a while for them all to get off the platform. A wizened old guard was up by the ticket barrier, letting them go through the gate in 2s and 3s, so they didn't attract attention by all bursting out of a solid wall at once and alarming the Muggles.
"You must come and stay this summer," said Ron. "Both of you. I'll send you an owl."
"Thanks," said Harry. "I'll need something to look forward to."
People jostled them as they moved forward toward the gateway, back to the Muggle world. Some of them called, "Bye, Harry!"
"See you, Potter."
"Still famous," said Ron, grinning at him. Not where I'm going, I promise you, said Harry. He, Ron, and Hermione passed through the gateway together.
There he is, Mum! There he is! Look!
It was Ginny Weasley, Ron's younger sister, but she wasn't pointing at Ron.
Harry Potter! She squealed. Look, Mum, I can see!
Be quiet, Ginny, and it's rude to point. Mrs. Weasley smiled down at them. Busy year? She said. Very, said Harry. Thanks for the fudge and the sweater, Mrs. Weasley. Oh, it was nothing, dear.
Ready, are you?
It was Uncle Vernon, still purple-faced, still moustached, still looking furious at the nerve of Harry, carrying an owl in a cage in a station full of ordinary people. Behind him stood Aunt Petunia and Dudley, looking terrified at the very sight of Harry.
You must be Harry's family, said Mrs. Weasley.
In a manner of speaking, said Uncle Vernon. Hurry up, boy. We haven't got all day.
He walked away. Harry hung back for a last word with Ron and Hermione. See you over the summer, then.
Hope you have a good holiday,
said Hermione, looking uncertainly after Uncle Vernon, shocked that anyone could be so unpleasant.
Oh, I will, said Harry, and they were surprised at the grin that was spreading over his face. They don't know we're not allowed to use magic at home. I'm going to have a lot of fun with Dudley this summer.
Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone was read by Jim Dale. Text copyright J.K. Rowling, 1997. Recording copyright Listening Library. An imprint of the Penguin Random House Audio Publishing Group, 1999. Digitally remastered by Pottermore at Pinewood Studios in 2015. Pottermore is the digital entertainment, news and e-commerce company from J.K. Rowling, inspired by her Harry Potter books and the wider wizarding world. Pottermore is a place for Harry Potter fans to be entertained and discover more of the wizarding world they love through Pottermore.com experiences or products including Harry Potter ebooks, digital audiobooks, and more. Harry Potter characters, names, and related indicia are trademarks and copyright of Warner Brothers Entertainment. The story continues. Find out what happens next in this preview of the digital audiobook Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets by J.K. Rowling. Text copyright J.K. Rowling 1998. Recording copyright Listening Library 1999. An imprint of the Penguin Random House Audio Publishing Group.
Chapter 1. The Worst Birthday. Not for the first time an argument had broken out over breakfast at No. 4 Privet Drive. Mr. Vernon Dursley had been woken in the early hours of the morning by a loud hooting noise from his nephew Harry's room.
Third time this week, he roared across the table. If you can't control that owl, it'll have to go.
Harry tried yet again to explain.
She's bored, he said. She's used to flying around outside. If I could just let her out at night.
Do I look stupid?
Snarled Uncle Vernon, a bit of fried egg dangling from his bushy moustache.
I know what'll happen if that owl's let out.
He exchanged dark looks with his wife, Petunia. Harry tried to argue back, but his words were drowned by a long, loud belch from the Dursley's son, Dudley.
I want more bacon.
There's more in the frying pan, sweetums, said Aunt Petunia, turning misty eyes on her massive son. We must build you up while we've got the chance. I don't like the sound of that school food.
Nonsense, Petunia. I never went hungry when I was at Smeltings, said Uncle Vernon heartily. Dudley gets enough, don't you, son?
Dudley, who was so large his bottom drooped over either side of the kitchen chair, grinned and turned to Harry.
Pass the frying pan.
You've forgotten the magic word, said Harry irritably.
The effect of this simple sentence on the rest of the family was incredible. Dudley gasped and fell off his chair with a crash that shook the whole kitchen. Mrs. Dursley gave a small scream and clapped her hands to her mouth. Mr. Dursley jumped to his feet, veins throbbing in his temples.
I meant please, said Harry quickly. I didn't mean...
What have I told you?
Thundered his uncle, spraying spit over the table.
About saying the M word in our house.
But I...
How dare you threaten Dudley? Roared Uncle Vernon, pounding the table with his fist. I warned you. I will not tolerate mention of your abnormality under this roof.
Harry stared from his purple-faced uncle to his pale aunt, who was trying to heave Dudley to his feet.
All right, said Harry, all right.
Uncle Vernon sat back down, breathing like a winded rhinoceros, and watched Harry closely out of the corners of his small, sharp eyes. Ever since Harry had come home for the summer holidays, Uncle Vernon had been treating him like a bomb that might go off at any moment, because Harry Potter wasn't a normal boy. As a matter of fact, he was as not normal as it is possible to be. Harry Potter was a wizard. A wizard fresh from his first year at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. And if the Dursleys were unhappy to have him back for the holidays, it was nothing to how Harry felt. He missed Hogwarts so much, it was like having a constant stomachache. He missed the castle with its secret passageways and ghosts, his classes, though perhaps not Snape, the potions master, the mail arriving by owl, eating banquets in the great hall, sleeping in his four-poster bed in the tower dormitory, visiting the gamekeeper Hagrid in his cabin next to the Forbidden Forest in the grounds, and, especially, Quidditch. The most popular sport in the wizarding world. 6 tall goalposts, 4 flying balls, and 14 players on broomsticks. All Harry's spellbooks, his wand, robes, cauldron, and top-of-the-line Nimbus 2000 broomstick had been locked in a cupboard under the stairs by Uncle Vernon the instant Harry had come home. What did the Dursleys care if Harry lost his place on the house Quidditch team because he hadn't practiced all summer? What was it to the Dursleys if Harry went back to school without any of his homework done? The Dursleys were what wizards call muggles. Not a drop of magical blood in their veins. And as far as they were concerned, having a wizard in the family was a matter of deepest shame. Uncle Vernon had even padlocked Harry's owl, Hedwig, inside her cage to stop her from carrying messages to anyone in the wizarding world. Harry looked nothing like the rest of the family. Uncle Vernon was large and neckless, with an enormous black moustache. Aunt Petunia was horse-faced and bony. Dudley was blonde, pink, and porky. Harry, on the other hand, was small and skinny, with brilliant green eyes and jet-black hair that was always untidy. He wore round glasses, and on his forehead was a thin, lightning-shaped scar. It was this scar that made Harry so particularly unusual, even for a wizard. This scar was the only hint of Harry's very mysterious past, of the reason he had been left on the Dursleys' doorstep 11 years before. At the age of 1 year old, Harry had somehow survived a curse from the greatest dark sorcerer of all time, Lord Voldemort, whose name most witches and wizards still feared to speak. Harry's parents had died in Voldemort's attack, but Harry had escaped with his lightning scar, and somehow, nobody understood why, Voldemort's powers had been destroyed the instant he had failed to kill Harry. So Harry had been brought up by his dead mother's sister and her husband. He had spent 10 years with the Dursleys, never understanding why he kept making odd things happen without meaning to, believing the Dursleys' story that he had got his scar in the car crash that had killed his parents. And then, exactly a year ago, Hogwarts had written to Harry, and the whole story had come out. Harry had taken up his place at wizard school, where he and his scar were famous. But now the school year was over, and he was back with the Dursleys for the summer, back to being treated like a dog that had rolled in something smelly. The Dursleys hadn't even remembered that today happened to be Harry's 12th birthday. Of course, his hopes hadn't been high. They'd never given him a real present, let alone a cake. But to ignore it completely... At that moment, Uncle Vernon cleared his throat importantly and said,
"Now, as we all know, today is a very important day."
Harry looked up, hardly daring to believe it.
"This could well be the day I make the biggest deal of my career," said Uncle Vernon.
Harry went back to his toast. Of course, he thought bitterly, Uncle Vernon was talking about the stupid dinner party. He'd been talking of nothing else for 2 weeks. Some rich builder and his wife were coming to dinner, and Uncle Vernon was hoping to get a huge order from him. Uncle Vernon's company made drills.
"I think we should run through the schedule one more time,"
said Uncle Vernon. "We should all be in position at 8 o'clock. Petunia, you will be in the lounge," said Aunt Petunia promptly, "waiting to welcome them graciously to our home."
"Good, good. And Dudley?"
"I'll be waiting to open the door."
Dudley put on a foul, simpering smile.
"May I take your coats, Mr. and Mrs. Mason?" "They'll love him," cried Aunt Petunia rapturously.
"Excellent, Dudley," said Uncle Vernon. Then he rounded on Harry. "And you?"
"I'll be in my bedroom, making no noise and pretending I'm not there," said Harry tonelessly.
"Exactly," said Uncle Vernon nastily. "I will lead them into the lounge, introduce you, Petunia, and pour them drinks. At 8:15, I'll announce dinner," said Aunt Petunia. "And Dudley, you'll say, 'May I take you through to the dining room, Mrs. Mason?'"
said Dudley, offering his fat arm to an invisible woman.
"My perfect little gentleman," sniffed Aunt Petunia.
"And you?"
said Uncle Vernon viciously to Harry. "I'll be in my room, making no noise and pretending I'm not there," said Harry dully.
"Precisely. Now, we should aim to get in a few good compliments at dinner, Petunia. Any ideas?"
"Vernon tells me you're a wonderful golfer, Mr. Mason. Do tell me where you bought your dress, Mrs. Mason."
"Perfect, Dudley. How about, we had to write an essay about our hero at school, Mr. Mason, and I wrote about you."
This was too much for both Aunt Petunia and Harry. Aunt Petunia burst into tears and hugged her son, while Harry ducked under the table so they wouldn't see him laughing.
"And you, boy?"
Harry fought to keep his face straight as he emerged. "I'll be in my room, making no noise and pretending I'm not there," he said.
"Too right you will," said Uncle Vernon forcefully. "The Masons don't know anything about you, and it's going to stay that way. When dinner's over, you take Mrs. Mason back to the lounge for coffee, Petunia, and I'll bring the subject around to drills. With any luck, I'll have the deal signed and sealed before the news at 10. We'll be shopping for a vacation home in Mallorca this time tomorrow."
Harry couldn't feel too excited about this. He didn't think the Dursleys would like him any better in Mallorca than they did on Privet Drive.
"Right. I'm off into town to pick up the dinner jackets for Dudley and me, and you,"
he snarled at Harry,
"you stay out of your aunt's way while she's cleaning."
Harry left through the back door. It was a brilliant sunny day. He crossed the lawn, slumped down on the garden bench, and sang under his breath, "Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me." No cards, no presents, and he would be spending the evening pretending not to exist. He gazed miserably into the hedge. He had never felt so lonely. More than anything else at Hogwarts, more even than playing Quidditch, Harry missed his best friends, Ron Weasley and Hermione Granger. They, however, didn't seem to be missing him at all. Neither of them had written to him all summer, even though Ron had said he was going to ask Harry to come and stay. Countless times Harry had been on the point of unlocking Hedwig's cage by magic and sending her to Ron and Hermione with a letter, but it wasn't worth the risk. Underage wizards weren't allowed to use magic outside of school. Harry hadn't told the Dursleys this. He knew it was only their terror that he might turn them all into dung beetles that stopped them from locking him in the cupboard under the stairs with his wand and broomstick. For the first couple of weeks back, Harry had enjoyed muttering nonsense words under his breath and watching Dudley tearing out of the room as fast as his fat legs would carry him. But the long silence from Ron and Hermione had made Harry feel so cut off from the magical world that even taunting Dudley had lost its appeal. And now Ron and Hermione had forgotten his birthday. What wouldn't he give now for a message from Hogwarts? From any witch or wizard? He'd almost be glad of a sight of his archenemy, Draco Malfoy, just to be sure it hadn't all been a dream. Not that his whole year at Hogwarts had been fun. At the very end of last term, Harry had come face to face with none other than Lord Voldemort himself. Voldemort might be a ruin of his former self, but he was still terrifying, still cunning, still determined to regain power. Harry had slipped through Voldemort's clutches for a second time, but it had been a narrow escape, and even now, weeks later, Harry kept waking in the night, drenched in cold sweat, wondering where Voldemort was now, remembering his livid face, his wide, mad eyes.
Harry suddenly sat bolt upright on the garden bench. He had been staring absent-mindedly into the hedge, and the hedge was staring back. Two enormous green eyes had appeared among the leaves. Harry jumped to his feet just as a jeering voice floated across the lawn.
"I know what day it is," sang Dudley, waddling toward him.
The huge eyes blinked and vanished.
"What?" said Harry, not taking his eyes off the spot where they had been. "I know what day it is,"
Dudley repeated, coming right up to him. "Well done," said Harry. "So you finally learned the days of the week."
"Today's your birthday," sneered Dudley. "How come you haven't got any cards? Haven't you even got friends at that freak place?"
"Better not let your mum hear you talking about my school," said Harry coolly. Dudley hitched up his trousers, which were slipping down his fat bottom.
"Why are you staring at the hedge?"
he said suspiciously. "I'm trying to decide what would be the best spell to set it on fire," said Harry. Dudley stumbled backward at once, a look of panic on his fat face.
"You can't. Dad told you you're not to do magic. He said he'd chuck you out of the house, and you haven't got anywhere else to go. You haven't got any friends to take you."
"Jiggery pokery," said Harry in a fierce voice. "Hocus pocus, squiggly wiggly."
"Mom!"
howled Dudley, tripping over his feet as he dashed back toward the house.
"Mom, he's doing you know what."
Harry paid dearly for his moment of fun, as neither Dudley nor the hedge was in any way hurt. Aunt Petunia knew he hadn't really done magic, but he still had to duck as she aimed a heavy blow at his head with a soapy frying pan. Then she gave him work to do, with the promise he wouldn't eat again until he'd finished. While Dudley lolled around watching and eating ice cream, Harry cleaned the windows, washed the car, mowed the lawn, trimmed the flower beds, pruned and watered the roses, and repainted the garden bench. The sun blazed overhead, burning the back of his neck. Harry knew he shouldn't have risen to Dudley's bait, but Dudley had said the very thing Harry had been thinking himself. Maybe he didn't have any friends at Hogwarts. "Wish they could see famous Harry Potter now," he thought savagely as he spread manure on the flower beds, his back aching, sweat running down his face. It was 7:30 in the evening when at last, exhausted, he heard Aunt Petunia calling him.
"Get in here and walk on the newspaper."
Harry moved gladly into the shade of the gleaming kitchen. On top of the fridge stood tonight's pudding, a huge mound of whipped cream and sugared violets. A loin of roast pork was sizzling in the oven.
"Eat quickly. The Masons will be here soon," snapped Aunt Petunia,
pointing to two slices of bread and a lump of cheese on the kitchen table. She was already wearing a salmon-pink cocktail dress. Harry washed his hands and bolted down his pitiful supper. The moment he had finished, Aunt Petunia whisked away his plate.
"Upstairs. Hurry!"
As he passed the door to the living room, Harry caught a glimpse of Uncle Vernon and Dudley in bow ties and dinner jackets. He had only just reached the upstairs landing when the doorbell rang, and Uncle Vernon's furious face appeared at the foot of the stairs.
"Remember, boy, one sound."
Harry crossed to his bedroom on tiptoe, slipped inside, closed the door, and turned to collapse on his bed. The trouble was, there was already someone sitting on it.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.